Hey there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last week, Governor Phil Scott ran out the clock on legislation to create a retail system for recreational cannabis. So the bill went into law without his signature. Vermont's now on a path to having a taxed and regulated system for selling and buying high THC cannabis. But this won't happen overnight. The state has basically 2 years to set up the framework, approve the retail organizations that will be participating, and possibly make amendments to the legislation to address the concerns of some of the people that we'll hear from today. We're going to spend the hour talking about this legislation from a few different angles. First, we're going to get an overview of what's in it and why two of its sponsors think it's a good bill. And then we'll hear some of the concerns around racial and economic justice and what kinds of equity issues could be addressed in the next 2 years. We'll also hear from the advocacy group representing growers and producers about how some local growers worry they're going to be pushed out of the market. So as I mentioned, first we're going to get some firm footing on what this new law actually says and what the timeline is for when we may see retail cannabis businesses starting up in our communities and how communities have a say in whether or not that will be happening within their boundaries. Joining us first today is Senator Dick Sears, a Democrat from Bennington and lead sponsor of S-54. Senator Sears, nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you, too.
And we hope to have Senator Joe Benning, a Republican from Caledonia County, who is also a sponsor of the bill, with us soon. But in the meantime, as we work on getting Senator Benning set up, Senator Sears, why did you think this is important for Vermont to have? We have legal recreational cannabis. We have since 2018, but we have not had a marketplace. We've not had a way for Vermonters to buy and sell high THC cannabis in Vermont. So why was that something that felt like important to you?
I felt it was extremely important to have a place where people could legally purchase the product, and particularly in light of Massachusetts and Maine recently coming online with their own retail outlets. I also felt strongly that having a market that's tested and regulated would be a positive. If there's money to be made for the state and money and jobs to be created, that's great. But I think one of the most important things is to have a regulated market similar to what we have today for alcohol.
There was some tension in the last couple of years, Senator Sears, between people who were saying, there's no hurry. Let's wait and see how it works for other states so that when it's ready for us to do it in Vermont, we know what pitfalls to avoid and, you know, where to move forward. And then there were others who said, if we wait too long, states like Massachusetts, like Maine and others are going to be taking some of the potential market away from Vermont and some of the money that could be used for other things within Vermont out. Where did you fall and how did you ride that tension?
Well, I felt it was important that we have a competitive edge with our other states. I was certainly hoping that we had done this before Massachusetts actually got up and running. We've had bills in the Senate for several years now, and this is the first time we've actually gotten a bill passed. But I live in Bennington County. We're right on the border with Massachusetts. Williamstown, Mass. Has reported, and it's anecdotal, but about 20% of the sales come from Vermont to their retail outlet in Williamstown. That means that Vermonters are going to Massachusetts to make their purchases, and that those same individuals would probably be preferring to buy in Bennington or elsewhere in Bennington County and in the Windham County area.
We're joined now as well by Senator Joe Benning, who, as I said, is a Republican from Caledonia County, also a sponsor of the bill. Senator Benning, thank you for being here.
Good afternoon, Jane.
So, you know, you've heard Senator Sears talk about motivations for moving forward with a retail cannabis marketplace. Was it similar reasons for you that this was an important thing to have if we were going to have legalized recreational cannabis?
Well, I think it goes back a long ways at this point in time as to where I got an interest in this. But suffice to say, when the RAND report came out And it listed Vermont as being either at the top or perilously close to the top, depending on what year it was, in per capita consumption. I recognized that first legalizing it was appropriate because the war on drugs was an abysmal failure. And secondly, that when you have that many people who are consuming, if you're going to legalize it, you're going to want to have a place where they can purchase it legally as well and not continue to promote the underground economy. So I'm going to add to what Dick has said previously and say that this bill has had more people working on it for a longer period of time and examination through testimony than any other bill I've seen in my 10 years of being in the legislature. So to those who think that this was done too quickly, that's just not correct. To those who think we should have moved faster, well, there's some merit to that conversation, but doing it right has been something that we have always been interested in, and we have left no stone unturned.
Well, and it sounds like, though, there still may be some changes that come up, amendments in the next 2 years, and we can get into those. But before we start talking about what changes people would like to see, let's make sure that we are all on the same page with understanding what this entails. And I'm going to ping pong between the two of you, but we're going to just try to sort of top line go through some of the things that this bill does, this law now does. So, Senator Sears, maybe you can explain. Part of it was a tax and regulate. So what is the tax part? How much are we taxing? You know, what is the system for taxation?
Well, in the compromise, and I use the word underlying compromise, that was worked out between the Senate, the House, and in some respects, the governor's office, there are two different taxing systems here. One is the 6% sales tax. And that sales tax will go exclusively to after school and summer programs aimed at youth. And the priority in that money would go to underserved areas of the state, which I think is tremendously important. Both Senator Benning and I represent rural parts of the state. And so I felt very good about that part of the bill. Secondly, there's a 14% excise tax, and that excise tax would go 30% of the excise tax will go to prevention and to substance misuse programs. So that's we need to build a strong fence around that in the coming year to make sure that that money actually does go to those programs. And I've already heard from some people with concerns about that. And then the remaining 70% goes to the general fund. And then there would be fees on top of that that cover the cost of licensing and so forth.
Senator Benning, are you convinced, are you confident that there will not be a black market that can sell cannabis cheaper that will still sort of be so robust that it undercuts this retail market?
Well, Jane, I believe that the underground economy is always going to be there in some fashion. The purpose of this bill is to interdict as much of that as possible. But this is not a magic wand that will suddenly make that underground economy go away. The point is that we want to start a whole new philosophy on how you purchase the product. And I think that most Vermonters are going to do it the legal way. And it is something we've all been anxious to see happen. There's some kind of a place to go that is not only monitored for quality of product, but can give an education to people on how they consume and is for sure a place where youth will not have access. That's a step in the right direction. It is not the overall cure for that underground economy.
Senator Benning, so when we talk about a tax and regulate system, there's the tax part and then there's the regulate. And, you know, the Cannabis Control Board is expected to be set up now by January, right? Very tight timeline. And then, you know, explain the role of the Cannabis Control Board now that it's law.
Well, there's 102 pages of this bill, and I would say
yes, there are.
The majority of those pages are devoted to what the board has to do. There is a system of first setting up who the people will be who are going to be on that board. The board itself then has to design a licensure system for everything, literally from seed to sale, and then have priorities that are developed as to who would be recipients of those licenses. And part and parcel of that discussion is listing priorities for who should be entitled to them. And I could go on for hours about what the actual obligations of the board are, but you are correct that the timeline is very tight. The governor is going to have to do some quick appointing. The Senate is probably going to end up having to confirm people, and getting all that done in COVID-19 is going to be an interesting exercise. But right now, I would say the vast majority of the pages of this bill have very minutiae details about what this board is going to be doing moving forward.
Well, maybe you could not go into the minutiae, but talk a little bit, because we are going to be discussing some concerns that people have around, you know, whether small Vermont growers could be pushed out of the marketplace and whether there's enough attention paid to racial and economic equity and justice in this bill.
Sure.
And so, and particularly if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what leeway the Cannabis Control Board has to decide these things versus what the legislature is mandating on those issues?
Well, let's back up and say that the legislature has always had a desire to keep this in a small business Vermont kind of way delivery system. We have never been interested in big pharma or big corporations or cartels taking over this system. So the whole scheme has been set up to try to promote small Vermont businesses moving forward. One of the things we want to avoid is any kind of major criminal elements that would come with a large corporate structure. And so it has been very important for the legislature, as we took testimony on this bill and we examined what was going on in other states, that we come up with something that was as strong as possible in promoting that small Vermont businesses. The priorities that the board is going to have to come up with is really concentrating on a couple of different things beyond that discussion of keeping it small. One of the most important has been trying to foster social justice and equity in the industry itself, and bringing in minority-owned businesses and women-owned businesses. So getting to a point where they concentrate on that area, they then have to follow up with specifically recruiting and hiring and implementing some kind of a development ladder for minorities, women, and individuals who've historically been disproportionately impacted by cannabis prohibition. I don't know that this is the magic wand either. I do understand that you may be hearing in moments from people who are still unhappy that the bill didn't go far enough. But keep in mind, this is really not the vehicle that is going to cure what has gone on with racial disparities in the past. This is one step in the direction of trying to correct that problem, but it is not the overall vehicle, and it would become a much larger bill if we were planning to have that entire conversation wrapped up as a cure-all from this particular vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, Senator Sears, this sort of becomes a philosophical argument about the role of government in some ways as well, although for people who are involved, it's, you know, far from just philosophical. It can have real economic importance. But, you know, to Senator Benning's point, how do you see the role of the legislature in sort of guiding the principles versus saying this is what you need to do when it comes to social justice, economic justice, and racial and gender justice?
But I think it's certainly important that we continue in the efforts to make Vermont a leader. And one of the things that happened during our discussions of the conference committee on S-54 was we had passed earlier in the session an expungement of all marijuana convictions for misdemeanor possession, and we in the Senate. And the House had decided not to take it up during the COVID crisis. So we as the Senate members asked that it be considered either as a part of S-54 or as a part of another bill. And that involves over 10,000 convictions, by the way. And one of the factors that comes out of that is that in a 2013 study, persons of color were four times more likely to be arrested for marijuana conviction, for marijuana possession, than others. And that's in a state with a very low population of persons of color. So certainly I think that was a real step forward. It got passed as part of a different bill, but I'm glad that we did that. And by the end of next year, we'll see over 10,000 convictions expunged for possession of small amounts of marijuana.
Let me just pause you there, and just to clarify for people who weren't following this, because it's an interesting companion bill to S-54, which is now Act 164, the retail cannabis bill. And this expungement bill it's an automatic expungement bill that clears the record of anyone who was convicted of possession of 2 ounces or less. And it's an important companion, because my understanding was that if you had a conviction of 1 ounce or less, that was expunged before now when cannabis became legal in a retail sense or in a recreational sense. But you had to petition if you had between 1 and 2 ounces, and this will be an automatic expungement. Can I just ask you to clarify those, Senators?
Actually,
yeah, go ahead.
Actually, just to be specific, there was most people, the law was specific to under an ounce, and then, but the possession was under 2 ounces for misdemeanor possession. And many times the weight was not provided. So people who had maybe 3/4 of an ounce were being convicted just as if they had had an ounce and 3/4. So there was no distinction. And so in order to get rid of those convictions where there hadn't been an actual weight provided of the possession, we had to change that law and decriminalize that. And so there's a lot of other things that went into that, but it clearly, because it'll take some time, we put in provisions that if someone had been convicted of that, they can say, as of the effective date of the bill, that they had no conviction. But it'll take some time for the court to actually go through and automatically expunge over 10,000 convictions.
Can I just – I don't want to derail this conversation too much, but what about charges? You know, if you were charged but not convicted, but you're applying for a job in Vermont, we know we have the ban the box, so you don't have to say that you've been arrested when you first apply for a job. But, you know, even just having an arrest on your record can certainly have an influence on what you're able to do when it comes to jobs, et cetera. So what about charges?
But charges and Senator Benning as a as a defense attorney can speak more eloquently probably about it than I, but a charge is not the same as a conviction. When you were asked whether you've ever been convicted of a crime, not whether you've been charged. A lot of people are charged with things. That would not be part of your record that you would have to disclose as part of a job application or to become, you know, I had people, who came to me who had minor possession charges years ago and were unable to accompany their grandchild on a school trip, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I should jump in here, Jane, to say, just to show how long ago this conversation actually started, because the expungement process was not available in Vermont prior to 2011. And if you think about all the people that have gone on to get an expungement of their records, there's well over 14,000 of them at this point in time, but that all began in 2011. And I am very proud to say that the sponsor of that initial bill was Senator Sears, and that was the first bill that I signed on to, and I was very happy to work with him in that regard. But this process of expungement continues to evolve, and it is a just process. I'm hoping that we can continue to have that conversation as this bill goes forward.
As this process has moved through over the several years as well, one of the things that we have learned from other states who have gone before us is that some of the expectations around how much revenue could be expected needed to be adjusted. So, you know, there may be a sort of a ramp up to how much revenue a state is going to be able to collect from a taxation and regulation system here for retail cannabis. So, Senator Benning, what is the expectation? What is the state anticipating in terms of sales?
We had an interesting go-around during the committee of conference between the House and Senate members about what the expectations were going to be. And at some point, I just said, you know, folks, we are talking here in a vacuum. This is sheer speculation. We have no idea how much money is going to come out of this. It has never been one of the driving factors for me personally. This expectation of dollars has to come after we get an answer of who is going to be getting a license. Where are retail establishments going to be set up? Will there be a town anywhere in Vermont that will opt in to establish a retail establishment? All of those questions have to be answered before we can even begin to speculate and anticipate what sum of dollars are going to follow. And right now, if I was to say X and you were to say Y, neither one of us could accurately predict what's going to end up coming down the pike until all those questions get answered.
Now, concerns still exist about what this law will do and what it won't do. And even those who say they don't oppose retail cannabis on principle would still like to see perhaps some changes come into play before October of 2022, when most retail establishments would be able to start opening. Joining us now is Mark Hughes, Executive Director of Justice for All and the coordinator of the Vermont Racial Justice Alliance, which has been campaigning against S-54. Mark Hughes, nice to talk with you.
Hey, Jane. Thank you for having me again. I really appreciate the invite.
Well, I appreciate having you here to share your perspective on, you know, where you think this law falls short and maybe, you know, since it is law, what you're hoping for now moving forward in the next 2 years that would help address your concerns.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And first, I just want to shout out to Senator Dick Sears and Senator Joe Benning. You know, sat in many rooms with these folks. These guys are the real deal. And I want to just let you guys know we appreciate the work that you're doing and you've gotten done here with this bill. And I also wanted to shout out to the rest of the folks who represent our coalition, the real coalition, and that would be the folks from the Justice for All, the Alliance, as well as NOFA Vermont, the Rural Vermont organization, as well as Vermont Growers Association and Trace. So there is a coalition that was really looking to try to move this thing forward from an equity perspective. That is correct. Contrary to popular opinion, we never really sought to try to end this bill. We always wanted to work to improve it, and we're still here to work with the senators to do so. So congratulating them for the work that they've done, but also still here wanting to move forward this bill in such a way where we're able to do some things that would provide some additional help for folks who would have some challenges. So this is not about expungement. This is not about, you know, that piece of it. You know, 234, we understand. We think that expungement work probably should have been done quite a while ago when legalization and decriminalization was really maybe a couple of years ago. But beyond that, when we start talking about, you know, I'll just quote the governor. The governor said, justice should be foundational to our work, not an add-on to be figured out secondarily to commercial or other interests. And that was his response to his allowing this bill to pass. So, yeah, we're still there. There's some stuff that we put out for the legislature to consider. In all fairness to the senators, you guys didn't see that until conference committee. Neither of you saw any of that until conference committee. Why? Because the Illinois law didn't emerge until sometime beginning of February of this year.
Let me interject here because you've been mentioning a couple of points that are interesting and maybe we can tease out a little bit of them. I mean, sure. you have said that this expungement bill that we were just talking about, you know, isn't going far enough. You say it should have happened before, but it's there. But expungement of those who have a prior criminal record for low-level possession of cannabis does something, but doesn't do enough. So in terms of the actual criminal justice side of things, is there more that you'd like to see on that?
Yeah, thank you for that question, and because it really takes us to the heart of the conversation. is when we start talking about equity and we start talking about racial justice, are we having a criminal justice conversation? Are we having an economic conversation? I think it was King who said there needs to be a real radical redistribution of political and economic power. We know the pain that this weed has caused in our communities. We don't even understand the damage because it's not on an individual basis. It goes out to families in concentric circles and beyond Vermont. But what we're talking about here is a market, okay? And, you know, similar to that Illinois policy that we put forward, this market, what it does is it creates opportunity, and that's economic opportunity. We've talked about ways in which we're going to disseminate revenue on this thing in many other ways, but what we haven't talked about is how are we going to take money or take opportunity to generate money and place it in the hands of those who are disproportionately impacted. And expungement doesn't do that. So
Mark, it sounds like, you know, it's interesting because it sounds like for you, this the questions of criminal justice and economic or social justice and sort of reparative work for a community that has been really adversely affected, those are really tied together for you.
Well, I think they're tied together for all of us.
Right.
I think the conversation about criminal justice has always been tied to racial justice because of a system that was created to institute and maintain the oppression of black people in 1850. That's why we have a criminal justice system today that has a mass incarceration rate of 2.3 million, almost over a million of which are black folks. I think the senator alluded earlier to the war on drugs. So we have to understand that intersection, but we also have to understand that there is an intersection as well as an intrasection when we talk about our responsibility for reparations, that is to repair the damage, and that a lot of that has come from an economic, it must come from an economic perspective when we have black folks have 1/13 the wealth of white folks. So here's the bottom line in terms of the racial piece. In this industry, if you don't have land and if you don't have capital, you lose. Okay, so that's what this bill fails to address. I'm glad that we're still having those conversations. Now, and let me be clear, the bill does move towards these areas. It does begin that process, and there's an awful lot that hangs on the Cannabis Control Board, which obviously doesn't exist, to do so. There were a lot of economic decisions that were made that do not rely upon the Cannabis Control Board that are headed towards implementation. So, again, we share we're glad that the governor spoke out and did say, the primary concern is that the licensing construct will disproportionately benefit Vermonters' existing medical dispensaries by giving them sole access to integrated licenses and an unfair head start on market. I think he also goes on to say that, you know, maybe they should be bearing more of that burden to address the method in which we go about addressing this whole idea of racial equity. I think I respect the senator's position. They don't believe that this should be a mechanism to address those concerns. And I think us and our 100 or so organizations that are behind us and the hundreds and hundreds of folks across Vermont that have signed on to our petition simply just say what we are saying is what better instrument to use to address this issue. I mean, when we start talking about how we address, for example, the public safety aspect of this or the education aspect of this, why would we put that in another policy?
Well, so Mark, let's put this to Senator Joe Benning. Let's start with you. You know, you've heard before what Mark Hughes and Justice for All and the Vermont Racial Justice Alliance are saying about this and you know, where the role of government is on social and racial justice and where this bill, in his opinion, falls short. So how do you address those concerns, Senator Benning?
Well, I think that Mark has been very passionate and very persistent in his appearances before our respective committees in the legislature when this bill was being developed. And it got to the point where the bill adopted many of the concerns that he's talking about now. So, for instance, page 44 of the bill talks about priorities and business and technical assistance. And these are just a few words, but let me read them. The board shall issue licenses pursuant to this chapter as determined according to a system of priorities adopted by rule by the board. The system of priorities shall require consideration of criteria, including 1. Whether the applicants have an existing medical cannabis dispensary license in good standing. 2. Whether the applicants would foster social justice and equity in the cannabis industry by being a minority or women-owned business. 3. Whether the applicant proposes specific plans to recruit, hire, and implement a development ladder for minorities, women, or individuals who have historically been disproportionately impacted by cannabis prohibition. 4. Whether applicants propose specific plans to pay employees a living wage and offer benefits. It goes on, but I'll leave it at that just to say that you have to plant the seed in order for change to happen. This bill has planted that seed in this particular industry, but it is not a vehicle that could be used as a cure-all for all the things that have been disproportionate for minorities and women throughout history. And my concern at the last minute when the governor was sort of hesitating on whether to let this pass or sign it or not and veto it, I've been meeting with the governor on a fairly regular basis over this piece of legislation. This conversation where he became hesitant came up fairly late in the game. And the planting of this seed is critically important for the conversation to go forward, but it has not yet been scoped out by the board. And there's plenty of opportunity for Mark and anybody else that's interested in this conversation to get before the board as those rules are being developed and try to fashion things that promote and continue the conversation. I just want to make the point that the seed has been planted with this piece of legislation, but to wait and pass something that actually has the cure-all for everything that needs to be done would have taken us decades to get to that point in trying to create legislation. It just doesn't happen that easily in a legislative environment, especially when it's in a Zoom mode.
All right. So Mark Hughes, I just have a minute left with you, and then we've got to get to some of our calls and emails and also another concern here from the Vermont Growers Association. But so given what we know now, you know, I think that we could have a whole hour talking about what we've just been kind of discussing, which really interests me, the role of the government in this conversation. But now that the law is passed, what is it that you're going to be advocating for with the Cannabis Control Board or with amendments to the legislation moving forward in the next 2 years?
Thanks for that final question. And we'll be advocating with the legislature, and we'll also be advocating with the Cannabis Control Board. I want to just appreciate the senator's response. But also indicate that there's a long ways between perfect and not so good. And I think we can do better. And despite his conversations with the governor signaled clearly that he did expect some legislative action beyond where we've come. And we're willing to be at the table to do that. We appreciate the fact that there was a need to get this done and understand the history in terms of what it took to get here. So we have a deep appreciation for that. The bill itself, definitely willing to work with the legislature in moving forward to advance some of the social additional racial equity causes, but want to make it very clear, nobody's looking for an end-all. Nobody's asking for an end-all for everything that's happened over the last 401 years, so that we wouldn't want to characterize it in that way. We just want to do better, and we're willing to come to the table and do so. And if we need to go to the Cannabis Control Board, certainly willing to do that as well. So thanking the senators again. Thank you as well, Jane. Thanks for having me on. And looking forward to next session so we can do some more work.
Well, good. I look forward to seeing more and having more conversations about what happens and where this goes. That's Mark Hughes, Executive Director of Justice for All and the coordinator of the Vermont Racial Justice Alliance. Thank you very much, Mark.
My pleasure.
So let's go to some of our calls. Tom is calling in from Randolph. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on. I love the show.
Thanks.
I really appreciate you guys addressing such an important issue, too. One thing I saw in California when I was out there for the last 14 years involved in the medical cannabis industry was that in Oakland, when recreational became legal, the first few licenses were given out to people that had criminal records with possession with cannabis. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I had another question, actually. I saw the industry go from one that was like locally owned and small business to one that's dominated by corporations, you know, out-of-state companies and people with a lot of money. Is there any considerations for that in this new bill?
Tom, thanks for the call. So, Senator Sears, yeah, how are you, or how does the legislation try, you mentioned it earlier, try to keep it what we sometimes call Vermont-sized or fit with right. the Vermont culture and Vermont economy and Vermont agriculture?
I'm glad that Tom mentioned that, because I think one of the places where it could be abused, and the governor also recognized it, was in the integrated system that's envisioned integrated licenses for the five current medical dispensaries. And I think there's a great concern there. And that's something that, if reelected, I certainly plan to look at. That was part of the bill. Throughout the bill, we have sections that try to make sure that it's a Vermont-sized growing and cultivation and processing. I also want to go back, and I thank Mark Hughes for some of his comments, but one of them that you may have missed was we passed this bill on March 1st of 2019 in the Senate. And it's very unusual that we didn't get to a conference committee until August of 2020. So as you know, the world changed, as did the United States, as did Vermont, dramatically in over a year and a half that we waited to get to conference committee on this bill. And so parts of this and parts of the issues related to growers, et cetera, we tried to deal with as best we could in a conference committee. But particularly on a number of these issues, things had changed. We learned from other states and so forth. So we expect that next year, those of us who get reelected or the newly elected Senate will be dealing with the issue of marijuana and cannabis and how we're going to move forward.
So, yeah, so this will be something that gets addressed again. Just specifically to Tom's questions about, you know, the size and making sure to prioritize Vermont growers, you know, what does the legislation include versus what the control board will do?
Well, I think the legislation clearly attempts to keep it small, cultivations, to try to provide a preference for small. And, again, the integrated licenses where you have the vertical system where a medical can hold all five licenses could be abused, and we're going to have to make sure that it isn't.
Well, while we're talking about this, this is a good moment to bring in Jeffrey Pizzutello. He's executive director of the Vermont Growers Association. It's an advocacy group that represents cannabis growers and producers, and the organization has opposed S-54, although, again, this is one of those organizations that doesn't necessarily oppose retail cannabis on principle, but had concerns and questions about the bill. So, Jeffrey, nice to have you join us.
Thank you so much, Jan. I really appreciate it.
So, you know, as we were talking about this with Mark Hughes, you know, the bill has passed. So the question of whether it should pass or not is moot at this point. So in the intervening 2 years now, what is it that the Vermont Growers Association is really interested in making sure gets addressed or changed or just illuminated?
Thanks for asking. And before I begin, I do want to say sincere thanks and appreciation to the two senators that are on this call. Our organization, the Vermont Growers Association, while it may be new to some of your ears, we are the new kids on the block. We very much have watched you guys over the years and sincerely appreciate your time and effort on the subject matter, and not just this session, but all the previous sessions. So that should not go unrecognized. And I will say that just to follow up on Mark Hughes' points, we are partners in the same coalition So we really are the in-state presence for a just and equitable marketplace in Vermont in terms of advocacy. Not only do we have the numbers in terms of nonprofits and organizations, but we really do have hundreds, if not thousands, of Vermonters at this point who have signed up for supporting and endorsing our policy. And what does that mean looking forward?
Yeah, what's the policy? What is it that you want?
So some of the things that we would like to see in the next session would be greater accessibility for everyday Vermonters in the marketplace. That would mean a value chain to market, so direct farm to sales. That's crucial, and I'm glad that Senator Sears had mentioned his concern over the dominance that the medical marijuana industry will have, and ensuring that Vermonters have accessibility to a retail license really helps support that and helps get at alleviating some of those concerns. So that's a key part for us in terms of looking at improvements for next year.
You know, you'd also like to see different changes to the zoning, you know, where there can be cannabis cultivation for on agricultural land, which would do what for you? What would that do that you can't do now?
Well, when we look at Vermont, you know, we're an agrarian state. Tourism is really important to us. We have destination breweries. These are breweries where people travel from out of state, spend a lot of money. This is where the local multiplier effect comes into play. They visit bed and breakfasts, restaurants. So we want to have that as quickly as possible in Vermont. And we think, in fact, the sooner the better. What's unique about cannabis legislation is, and not just in Vermont, but across all states, it's really important how a market rolls out. That initial rollout really designs and lays the groundwork for the rest of the market. So we would like to have that occur as quickly as possible. So considering cannabis more of an agriculture commodity and less of a commercial commodity, bringing it into our agriculture community through some of those changes would be welcomed, not just for our struggling families, but for those who are already active in our cannabis market. We have a hemp industry, so a lot of these hemp farmers want to participate.
Jeffrey Pizzatello is Executive Director of the Vermont Growers Association. More to come, I'm sure, with you as we move through the next 2 years. Jeffrey, thank you very much for sharing just a little bit about what you'd like to see moving forward.
Thanks for your time.
So before we go, Senator Benning, you know, one of the things that I know that the Vermont Growers Association also has a question about is why the bill asks towns that want to participate in this retail marketplace to opt in rather than having an opt-out provision. So what's the thinking on that?
Well, frankly, Jane, the Senate was very much in favor of an opt-out provision, and that would enable any retailer to come along and establish something unless the town had opted out of the option of having it. And we conceded on that point simply because we recognized the House was committed to having a complete opposite viewpoint from a town's perspective, and that the governor was siding with the House. So we ended up conceding on that point. My concern, having conceded on that, is it may be quite some time before a town takes the formal position of saying, yes, we're going to have this here. If you are a prospective retailer and you're looking for a place to set up a retail shop, you haven't any idea where in Vermont you can do that right now. And unless and until some town somewhere decides to opt in, that's not going to happen. So there'll have to be a formal vote. We don't have any idea who's going to vote to do that, whether it will be by petition or whether the town will take it on their own initiative. But I see that as delaying the rollout of this process.
Do you think that's going to be happening maybe at the next town meetings? I mean, is that something that towns are going to discuss in that format?
Well, I actually had proposed that during the conversation. I thought a good compromise would be that automatically every town in the state should have a vote on it come town meeting day, and that at least a retailer would know what town was able to maintain it. But that idea didn't get sold on the table. So it's the way the system works.
Yeah, and Senator Sears, I mean, again, there's a lot we could discuss here, but in just the minute that we have left, I do want to ask, it sounds like medical dispensaries will be able to start selling to the public in May of 2022 when newer retail organizations that are just coming online won't be able to until October. So does that favor dispensaries in a way that's unfair, do you think?
It may. And I agree with the governor that we need to revisit the entire idea there. On the other hand, medical dispensaries have, you know, will be obviously having their point of view heard in the legislature. But I thought the governor made some good points about the integrated licenses and giving them a head start might create an unfair advantage.
Well, it's good to know that, you know, there's still going to be something to talk about in January when the legislature reconvenes for a new session. I thought, you know, nobody'd have anything to talk about, but it sounds like there'll still be issues.
This does not go away.
Well, I appreciate both of you giving us your time today and helping us understand this new law that just did go into law last week, but we won't see retail establishments until 2022. Senator Dick Sears is a Democrat from Bennington, primary sponsor of S-54. Senator Joe Benning of Caledonia was also a sponsor of the bill. Thank you very much, senators.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you both. Thank you, Jane.